and some summer evenings, when the tide would be out, we would amuse ourselves by playing around the big black hut, which used to be situated on the new quay. It used to be a coal yard. Playing kick the tin was one of the favourite games those days. Sometimes we would go to the top of the outer pier, where there was a slide on the rocks, and sitting on a flat stone, we would slide down the limestone rocks and sometimes into the sea when the tide was just coming in. Crabbing too was another pastime. When the tide was low, we would go to Gansey Rocks and then come behind the outer pier and work our way around the point until dark. We could always find something to do to make money. Some of us would get a job at gardening, whilst others went round the farms thinning turnips and general nuisances really half the time. Then the threshing mills would be at the farms, and we could always find work there. On Sunday mornings, we used to meet on the fine days at a shop down in the High Street. It was customary to collect there about 10:30 in the morning and walk to the Chasm House. We would meet boys from the How and Fisted up there for an exchange of news, and then we would be smoking Woodbines and Captain Cigarette for about 30 minutes or so, and then return to our homes for our Sunday dinner. In 1926, there was an 8-hole golf course made at Ballacraggan Estate. This was long before the present one at the point. The first and second green were in the stone field. Then the course carried on across the road and down through to Renwillen Field, and then along to Gansey and behind Ballaquini, and then up slowly towards the back of the promenade houses until we came up to the station road field. We lads learnt to play there on those links. After many years, it was returned to farmland. It was a boon to the village those days, and lots of golfers always came to play there. A few competitions were held. Mr. Alf Crabbin was the professional there in those days. We lads used to play there, as we could hire clubs from the pavilion. There used to be two cargo boats of the Steam Packet Company who came into the harbour at weekends with provisions for the shops, and sometimes with timber and building gear. There was the Tyrconnel, captained by Mr. Collister, and the Cushing was captained by Mr. Squires. After unloading their boats, they would sail to Castletown and Peel sometimes. The captains would let us boys aboard with our bicycles when they went to Castletown, but we never went to Peel as we didn't know the road to come home. We lads could get a job too when the coal boats would come in. There were usually two boats in every week, as there were three coal merchants in the village, as well as the gasworks. We were employed at the guy ropes, which had to be pulled in order to empty the tubs of coal which came up from the hold and were tipped into the carts or lorries. I will now relate another poem concerning the time three of we lads went out to Kitterland for gulling. I call the poem Jeel. In our youth, in the port, there was Hugh, Tom and I. We did things now regarded as rash. Like the rest of the lads of our age, we were fly, trying various means to raise cash. If the weather was fine, Christmas carols paid well. Up to near night would stretch to a week. Summertime we'd get crabs, which we always could sell. We had nerve, perseverance, and cheek. In the spring we'd be out climbing cliffs just nearby. Gulls' eggs used to be worth tuppence each. At that time of the year, funds would always be high. Most gulls' nests were within easy reach. We found out we could sell all the eggs we could get. A cake shop in Port Erin would buy. Just the thing for we three. There might just be time yet, though late spring it was thought worth a try. Plans were laid one wet day we were in Miller's yard. We would raid Kitterland in the Sound. Perhaps get Hudson's boat if we coaxed very hard. From Ned Gale's yard a box could be found. We would have to go soon before eggs would hatch out. Any nest with three in, let them stay. No one else must be told of what we were about. Maybe we'd better go the next day. It was fine the next day, I remember that well. The strong winds had died down quite a lot. Breaking waves on the rocks told there still was a swell. We had doubts what to do, go or not. I then asked an old man if he thought it too bad. He replied to me from where he sat, "What you want is a bang on the ear, old my lad, a real good pretty sweet one at that." Later on it eased up, so we thought we'd best go. The flood tide would be on about now. To save time, Hugh and Tom took an oar each to row. A large tea chest reposed in the bow. We went over the side at a good steady pace. The flood tide in the Sound was now strong. It took three tries to make Kitterland through the race. All our plans for the raid had gone wrong. Now began the big job to fill up the tea chest. There were eggs everywhere all around. It was hard to avoid walking on a gull's nest. Here was wealth to be picked from the ground. Pulling grass, packing eggs, made hard work for we three. Weather changed, for the sun had now gone. Southwest wind had increased. White-top waves we could see. All the signs of a storm coming on. The rough sea soon grew worse with the wind against tide. We surveyed the whole scene from the Mound. "Let's get round Spanish Head, there'll be lee the far side. There was no shelter here in the Sound." The tea chest was about two-thirds full, more or less. It was put back on board and wedged tight. What we had would be worth 30 bob at a guess. Our concern was the eggs, not our plight. Hugh and Tom took the oars. I sat aft for to steer. When the sea came aboard, I could bail. Breathing stopped now and then. When the bow lifted clear, the tea chest tipped us down like a scale. When we reached Spanish Head, we were wet to the skin. The 2 hours slicing waves gave off spray. Backwash waves from the cliffs made the boat rock and spin. We were tossed like a cork all the way. There was lee at Blackhead. We went in for a rest. With a jam jar, I bailed the boat dry. Now, to make for the port, the top speed was thought best. Failing that, Perwick-neat Beach was nearby. People born to be hanged never drown, it is said. Luck and skill brought us back to the port. Wet and cold, we tied up just inside the pier head, brought the eggs to the yard for to sort. Home to change our wet clothes, then back down to the yard, we'd a check as to how the eggs fared. How to get them away now was going to be hard. People talk, we were just a bit scared. What to do made us think, and we hit on a plan. Get a fish box and drape it with wrack. A good box we soon found, owned by some fishermen. From the beach we got wrack in a sack. To disguise eggs like fish was a quick job to do. There was less risk that we'd be found out. We set off with the box, which was carried by two. It was late, there were few folk about. It was dark by the time we arrived at the shop. We were tired, it had been a long day. The man smiled at the box with the seaweed on top. He was told it was safer that way. Bring some more, the man said. Always use that disguise. I will buy all the eggs you can find. What will not do for cakes might come in for meat pies. Fetch them all, gulls or shags, any kind. We did not go again. Time for eggs had now gone. Other things to earn cash would be done. Stabbing flukes, shooting bulks, murdering, and so on. In those days, we were to make our own fun. Tom and Hugh are dead now. I'm the only one left to record that awful day. All the shops in the village had a message boy. Most of the shops had handcarts, which were used to deliver groceries and all kinds of food to local houses. As the boys grew older, they left to start a trade or went sailing. The shops were open late in those days, so the boys had to work long after school and all day Saturday till about 10 o'clock at night. We young lads found a job at one of these shops. I was able to become message boy in a butcher shop at one time. I think it would be 1922. It was hard work for we lads, pushing handcarts of meat all around the village and during the school holidays as well. And sometimes of an afternoon in the school holidays, we would be helping some of the butchers to go to different farms to assist in driving sheep and cattle to the slaughterhouse. And I remember too that there was no extra pay for those jobs in the holidays. As we were growing older, we abandoned Sunday morning walk to the chasms and would visit some of the schooners that were berthed there in the harbours. Some of them were tied to the iron buoys out in the harbour, known as the dead man's. Once aboard the schooners, we would gather in the forecastle and smoke capstan and woodbines. In the winter months, there would be a lot of schooners in the harbour. Nowadays, there are none. I remember the names of most of them that were in the harbour those days. The Jesse Sinclair was there, the Harkaway, another three-master. The Jesse Sinclair, another three-master with Captain Jimmy Clugson's boat, the Lily Garten, a Ketch, the Margaret Garten, Captain Billy McGain's boat, the Venice, the Gold Seeker, and the Progress, and the XL. The XL was so named because the schooner was 40 feet long, and so the Roman numerals XL were cut into the bow, and it was not the word Excel as it used to be referred to. All the schooners were sailed by Manxmen. There are no funerals on Sunday nowadays, but in the old days it was a common sight. A lot of men, all in navy blue suits, attended them. It was customary to gather around the door of the deceased's house, as there were no chapels of rest those days. The parish clerk was in attendance, and the coffin would be brought out and rested on two chairs. Then hymns were sung afterwards. Afterwards, the coffin was put into the hearse, and everyone walked behind to the churchyard. Before arriving at the church, the old Manx tune would be raised, by the clerk, and some verse, word by line by line, to the words of that old psalm. Nowadays, people just attend the service in the church or chapel, and only the mourners attend at the graveside. Meetings in the old schoolroom used to be held in the winter times. Every Thursday, there was a religious meeting known as the Bright Hour. Various speakers would be on the platform, and some from other parts of the island. Hymns would be sung, accompanied by a small string orchestra. Magic lantern shows were put on some evenings, as well as cinema shows. The local choirs took part singing, and several others, and some soloists would be there singing well-known songs. It was a very pleasant meeting, which was carried on for years. That old Sunday school has been demolished, and now the Garden of Remembrance is situated on that site. I found it interesting looking back over the years. The village has changed nowadays. Some shops have different owners, and the local post office has been transferred at least four times to other shops. Thinking back over the years, I have not included the annual visit of Mr. Robert Matheson from Dublin to the village to hold the special services for the children on the chapel beach. For many years, towards the end of summer, the red banners with the initial CSSM would be erected every morning on the beach. Children would form and make a sand pulpit and decorate it with seaweed. Mr. Matthew had some helpers with him, and they would sometimes give an address, but he himself usually had something to say at every meeting. On Sunday afternoons, the meeting would be held on Gansey Rocks, where a number of we village lads would attend it. We learned some beautiful choruses those afternoons. On Sunday evening, the service was held in the Happy Valley after the local chapels were closed. In the early mornings, a short service was usually held in the town hall. Mr. Matheson is dead many years now, but later generations of the Mathesons are carrying on where he left off, and the red banner still is seen on the beach today. The churches of the village had a memorial erected on the lower promenade near to where the meetings were held in those early days, in memory of that wonderful man. I will close my narrative with a poem about two men who went down to Port Vourke to collect lobster pots for storing for the winter months. One of the men told me about it, and later on I wrote the story in poetry form, and I've called it The Storing of the Pots. In the summertime, there's lobster pots in Portrait Mary Bay. They are marked by 1,000 head cocks and are hauled up every day. For some men it is a living, and for others it's fresh food. With the lobsters very plentiful, they all fare pretty good. At the back end of the year, the pots are always brought ashore. Any large yard or a garden shed is used to make a store. Slime and seaweed on the thows rot off when they're put out to dry. Later on they're taken in and coiled, and with the pots put by. Tommy Quirk, who lived up on the Cronk, had pots to fetch and store. They'd been hauled and lay on Port Vourke Beach a week or so before. Three or four trips with his handcart was as much as he would make. Half a dozen lobster pots at once was all that he could take. In the course of conversation with a man he slightly knew, Tommy spoke about his lobster pots and what he'd planned to do. Then the man said he would like to come and help him with the work. They agreed to meet each other down the New Quay at Port Vourke. Tommy went to get his pots next day, walked down to the new quay, pushed his handcart to the big warehouse and parked it by the tree. Looking round, he found his friend not there, so went down on the beach, hid his pots and thows piled high and dry, where high tides did not reach. There were other men down on the beach, so talk began to flow. Still no sign of Tommy's friend about, the men began to go. At the warehouse door a car had stopped, and his friend came on the scene. Didn't know where Pork Burk Beach just lay, inquiring he had been. It was time to start to move the pots. They walked up with one each, stepping over mooring ropes and chains that lay there on the beach. Tommy, leading, walked towards his cart, then had to pass a car, an estate type with a trailer hitched and splashed with mud and tar. "Why not fill the trailer?" said his friend, "for that will be the best." "Right-o then," said Tom. He put his in and went back for the rest. On went 20 lobster pots and thows. The trailer held them all. Then they rested, lit their cigarettes, and sat down on the wall. Tommy moved to go, walked round the car, and opened the back door. To make room to sit, he moved some tins and put them on the floor. Whilst in doing this, his friend came in. He, too, sat in the back, spoke inquiring how to clean his hands the tarred thows had made black. They discussed a while, then silence reigned, and Tommy thought a bit. Surely my friend should be in the front. Why come in here and sit? Though he felt it strange, he said no word, thought someone would arrive, maybe his friend's wife or else his son, some person who could drive. Then his friend spoke up. "We'd better go, get to the wheel and start." "I can't drive," said Tommy. "It's your car. I've only got a cart." "If it's not your car then," said his friend, "we've filled it with your gear." "I've not got one either, never had." "Who's this at then parked here?" They sat looking at each other then, for neither was to blame. Then they got out quickly to unload before the owner came. From the warehouse door a man appeared. He told them both to stop. "We've been watching you some time," he said, "and laughing fit to drop." "I'm the owner of this car," he said. "Don't bother to unpack. Your performance reached its climax when you both got in the back." Tommy then explained as they went up his friend he'd lately met. Each man thought the other owned the car. They weren't acquainted yet. He apologized for what they'd done. The owner shook his head. "It was entertainment that for me, a real good laugh," he said. All this happened many years ago. I heard it recently. I have only changed the sailor's name. He told the yarn to me. Now I've come to the end of my story. That was how we lads of the village lived and amused ourselves in our youth. The port has changed throughout the years I've talked about. Gone are the old men, we young boys that were are the old men today. Quattro's boatyard is no more. The warehouse has been made into flats. No rowing boats are available either, as all the men have passed on. No herrings are landed here. No barrels are on the pier or stacked up in the fields. A few fishing boats fish for scallops. The steam packet boats haven't been in here for many years. No coal boats come in either. Coal is distributed by lorries all over the island these days from Douglas. The schooners have gone. In their place are private yachts and private boats which are used for fishing locally. When I look back in my mind, of how busy the place used to be 70 years ago, I feel very grateful to having lived when Portrait Mary was Portrait Mary. And that is the end.